Hello and welcome back. My name is Rabbi Avi Heller, and together we're learning Masechet Moed Katan. We find ourselves at the very bottom of Tet Zayin Amud Aleph, that's 16a. We're on the second line from the bottom, towards the end of the line. We've been discussing various aspects of excommunication, and we're talking here about two particular types of excommunication. One is called a Nidui, which is a court-appointed order of excommunication, and one is called a Nezifa, which is a self-inflicted contrition in when you offend your teacher or a great rabbi. So what we've been discussing is how long they should be. We had a statement that said that Nidui was 30 days long and Nezifa was 7 days long. And then we said in Bavel, they only kept Nidui for 7 days long, implying, as we'll see, that Nezifa is only 1 day long. But now we have a maximal position that Nezifa itself should be 30 days long. And we had an example of this in which Bar Kappara took upon himself 30 days of Nezifa. And we have another story right now, second to bottom line on Tet Zayin Amud Aleph. Shuv Pam Echad, another time, Gazar Rebbe Shelo Yishanu L'Talmidim Bashuk. Rebbe made a decree that they should not teach the students Torah in the marketplace. Maidarash, and he quoted a verse, not to say that this was a Torah law or a law derived from there, but to give us, you know, support for what he was saying or to explain his reasoning. So he darshaned a pasuk from Shir HaShirim, chapter 7. And the pasuk says, Chamukei Yerechaich Kemo Chalaim. I have the whole pasuk here. Actually, I don't. Let me get the whole pasuk here in front of me so I can read it to you. Just give me 1 second. Yeah, it says, Maya fupa amayach banalim. How beautiful are your feet in the sandals, bat nadiv, O princess. Chamukei yirechaich. Your hidden thighs, kimo chalaim, are like jewels. Ma'asei de'aman, they are the work of an expert craftsman. So he was interpreting this to say that the Torah is a great delicacy, and like a jewel. He says, my yerach baseter, but just like one's thighs in a modest society, one's thighs would be hidden. And now we're at the top of Tet Zayin Amud Bet. Af divrei Torah baseter, so too the words of the Torah should be hidden. Now the question is what he means by this, or what his reason is that he doesn't want Torah to be taught in the shuk. So I think there's two explanations. One is that the marketplace is not a good place for teaching Torah. It is not a modest place. It's not a nice place. It's not a place where people can sit and concentrate. So he didn't want people to teach Torah to the students there. Torah learning should be done in a hidden place where you can focus on it properly. And also perhaps a marketplace is not a proper place for Torah scholars to congregate. The Torah scholars are chalaim. They're like jewels. And they don't belong out in the marketplace learning Torah. They should be in the Beit Midrash. So that's one possibility, that the problem is the marketplace itself. The second possibility is that it's the Torah, not the scholars. The Torah should be taught in a place where people want to learn Torah, that you don't broadcast the Torah everywhere. You don't broadcast in the marketplace where anyone can listen to it and perhaps misunderstand it. Torah should be done in a place where, especially high-level Torah learning, should be done in a place where there's a self-selected group that comes to listen to it. So that seems to be the reason. One of those two reasons is the reason that Rebbe made a decree that he didn't want Torah learning to be happening in the marketplaces. Well, not everyone agreed with that decree. Yatzar Rabbi Chia went out, v'shana l'shnei bnei echav bashuk, and he taught his two nephews in the shuk. L'rav, he taught Rav, l'rav bar b'chan, and he taught them. So it seems like a pretty chutzpahic thing to do. He went against Rebbe and defied his edict that they shouldn't teach in the marketplace. Now, it could be that he wasn't trying to be disrespectful. Perhaps he thought that it didn't apply to such advanced students like Rav and Rabbi Barbar Chana. Perhaps those students were considered to be such high-level students that the decree didn't apply to them. Or perhaps he felt, since he was doing a private class with just two students and not a public class that was for everyone, that it didn't apply to them. Or perhaps he disagreed with the idea of the decree and felt that he had the prerogative to do his own thing. But Shama Rebbe, when Rebbe heard about what Rebbe Chia had done, Ikbid, and he was upset. Ata Rav Chia lit Chazile, a little bit later at some point, Rabbi Chia went to visit Rabbi Marle, and Rabbi said to him, Iya mikore lebuchutz. Iya, he said to him, that's his nickname for Rabbi Chia. Some people say that it is a derogatory nickname. I don't know if it's true or not, but both the chet and the ayin are gutturals. So he said to him, Iya, he called him Iya. Someone's calling you outside, meaning don't come in here and visit me. Someone needs to see you outside. It was, again, a sort of a subtle way of saying, I don't want to see you. I don't want to talk to you. I'm upset at you. So Yada, Rabbi Chia realized that did nakat milta bedate, that he was upset, that he couldn't let go of it, that it was grabbing hold of his mind, that he was angry at the way that he had challenged his decree. Nahag nizivuta benafshe, so he took upon himself nizifa, this period of contrition on himself, tlatin yomin, for 30 days. So we have two stories down here now of great rabbis who took upon themselves nizifa periods for 30 days. It seems to be a 30-day long period. And that will be the conclusion of the Gemara, but there's a little more to the story. We are 2, 4, 6 lines down from the top. Biyom Tlatin, on the 30th day of his Nizifa, Shalach Le, Rebbe sent to him, Ta Hadar, Shalach Le, he sent to him, meaning Rebbe said, come visit me. In other words, that was a sign that after 30 days, he was welcomed back, that he wasn't upset anymore. Tahadar shalach le, then he sent him another message, delo le, don't come. So he sent him two messages, one said come, one said don't come. So the Gemara asks, parenthetically, meikara my savar, in the beginning, meikara from the beginning, what was Rebbe thinking that he told him to come? Vilabasof, and in the end, my savar, what was he thinking that he told him not to come? So the Gemara explains, Meikara, in the beginning, Savar, he reasoned, Miktzat Hayom Kekulo. Part of a day is like the whole day. Often in Halacha, we have this possibility that you don't have to finish the last day of a period of time, that just the beginning of the day can count. It's an Ad V'Ad Bichlal or Ad V'Lad Bichlal. So for instance, the seventh day of Shiva, people get up in the morning. They just keep an hour or so of Shiva in the morning, and then they get up and they say, I kept Shiva on the seventh day, but only the beginning of the seventh day, because Miksar Hayom Kekulo, part of the day is like the whole day. So he felt like on the 30th day, he could say, 30 days is over, you can come visit me. Filibasof, and in the end, Savar, he reasoned, Lo Amrinan Miksar Hayom Kekulo. It's not true that in every area of Halacha, part of the day counts as the whole day. We don't count only 48 days of the Omer and say only you have to keep an hour in the 49th. We count a full 49 days, so to speak. So maybe in this case, he was saying, oh, I have to wait until the 31st day. So he sent him another message, don't come, meaning don't come until tomorrow. Tomorrow you can come visit me, because not until the 31st day is your period up. Lasof ata, but in the end, Rabbi Chia came to see him on the 30th day. Amar Le, and he said, Amai Atito, why are you here? Amar Le, Deshalach Limar, Delete. He goes, you sent me a message that I should come to you. But then he says, Vahash Sholchi Lach Delotete. But then I sent you a message that you shouldn't come. You know, so he was very confusing. Amar Le, Zera Iti, I saw the first message and I came right away. Vizelo Raiti, and this one I didn't see. By the time the second message arrived, I already left, meaning I got the first email and I responded right away. So Kari Allah, so then Rebbe quoted a verse on him. Birtzot Hashem Darche Ish Gam Oivav Yashlim Ito. When Hashem is pleased with a person's conduct, he turns even his enemies into his allies. In other words, this was Hashem's doing. If Hashem had wanted you to have to wait until the 31st day, then you would have gotten the second message. The fact that you didn't get the first message is a sign that Hashem wanted me to make peace with you already on the 30th day, even if Mitzvah Sayom is not Kekulo. Okay, so my time, Avad Mar Hachi. So we mentioned before, why did Rabbi Chia go against him? So here, this makes it sound, my time, what's the reason, Avad Mar Hachi, that this master acted this way? Why did Rabbi Chia teach people in public? So this Gemara makes it sound like, as I said in the beginning, that he had a philosophical argument with Rebbe, and he felt the Torah should be taught in public. And after all, this is a big dispute. It was a big dispute between among Hasidim in the 19th century about, you know, whether or not and among Mekubalim, should mystical teachings be taught in public or not in public? It's a philosophical dispute as to which things should be kept in a more secret setting, and which things should be in a more public setting. So he said, Amar Lei, Dichtiv, it's written, Chachmot Bachutz Tarona. Here you have a pasuk from Mishle. The whole pasuk says, Chachmot Bachutz Tarona, wisdoms shall be sung outside. Birchovot titein kola, in the streets let them have their voice. And he understands this to mean you should proclaim the Torah out loudly, like Tarona, and you should say it in the streets, like in the marketplace. So he understood this verse as an implying the Torah should be taught publicly. Amar Lei, so Rebbe said to him, Im Karita, if you read this pasuk, Lo Shanita, you didn't review this pasuk. Vim Shanita, and if you reviewed this pasuk, Lo Shilashta, you didn't read it a third time. Vim Shilashta, and if you read it three times, Lo Pirshu Lecha, it wasn't explained to you properly. In other words, your reading of the verse is an incorrect reading, and you should have been more diligent in understanding the proper reading. Chachmot Bachutz Tarona, when it says wisdom should be sung outside, Kidurava, this is like the interpretation of Rava, Da'amar Rava, as Rava said, Kala Osek Batorah Mi Bifnim, anyone who engages in the study of Torah inside, in a private way, Torato, his Torah, Machrezet Alav Mi Bachutz, it will declare about him in the outside. In other words, his renown as a Torah scholar he will become famous as a knowledgeable person. In other words, it's not that the Torah should be sung in public. It's that the Torah that a person learns will testify publicly to the person who learned it. So you understood it as that the Torah scholar should proclaim the Torah, and I understand it as the Torah will proclaim the Torah scholars. Okay, v'ha'ketiv, but then he has another verse for him. This pasuk is from Yeshayahu Memchat, from Isaiah 48. He says, Lo me rosh baseter dibarti. This is Hashem speaking to Yeshayahu, and he says, Lo me rosh, from the beginning, lo baseter dibarti. I didn't speak privately. In other words, Hashem said, my words of Torah were never, from the very beginning, spoken baseter, quietly. I always spoke them out in public. I was always clear about them. So that seems to indicate that the Torah should be public. So Rebbe responds to him, rejoins, Hahu, that refers to Biyomei Dekala, the days of the Yarchei Kala. In other words, when you have large Yimei Iyun, or gatherings of Torah scholars, then everybody knows that it's being proclaimed publicly. Everybody's coming to learn Torah at this time. But just to have a private shiur in the marketplace, that is not what it means in these pasukim. Okay, so they have such a dispute. Okay, now hold on. If you'll remember, at the very beginning of the story, Rebbe quoted a verse to suggest that just like that one's thighs, even if beautiful, should be kept private and sanua, so too the Torah should also be kept sanua. For Rebbe Chiya, hai chamuke yirechayich mayavidla. So Rebbe Chiya, this verse of chamuke yirechayich, your beautiful thighs, what does he do with that verse? How does he explain it? Mukila, he derives from it bitzdaka ugbigamilut chasadim, that acts of tzedakah and kindness, those are things that should be done privately. Your acts of tzedakah and milut chasadim are not things that you should advertise so that you can build up your reputation and have all sorts of ulterior motives for why you're doing nice things, put your name on a building. Rather, tzedakah and milut chasadim are most beautiful when they are done privately, just for the sake of doing the mitzvah. What we learn from this, after this whole story, Alma, therefore, second wide line at the end, Nazifa Ditu, their Nazifa, their form of contrition that they were doing tshuva for offending a great rabbi, Tlatin Yomin, these were 30 days. So far we have all of these proofs, two proofs, that it's 30 days. However, the Gemara rejoins and says, nope, you cannot prove from either of these. Both of these cases were situations where they had offended Rebbe, and Rebbe was the Nasi. He was the head of the Jewish community. So his Nazifas Nasi Shaini. The reason they kept 30 days is because Rebbe was the Nasi, and therefore they kept 30 days. But if you do any other Torah scholar, even if he's your teacher or another rabbi, a prominent rabbi, you would only keep, let's say, 7 days or possibly one day. But if you insult the Nasi, then maybe you have to keep 30 days. Unazifa didan kama havu. So then, how much is our nazifa? And by this, by ours, it means in Babylonia. So chad yoma, it's one day. Because if the nidui in the land of Israel was 30 days and the nazifa was 7 days, then if the nidui in Babel is only 7 days, the nazifa would only be one day. And now we're going to bring three stories that show that Nezifa in Babylonia was only one day. The first story is the story of Shmuel and Mar Okva. Kihavu Yatvei, when they would sit, Garsi Shmaita, and they would learn Torah, they would learn teachings of Torah. Havayativ Mar Okva Kame de Shmuel Berichuk Dalad Amot. Mar Okva would sit in front of Shmuel at a distance of 4 amos. The reason for this is because they had a complicated arrangement between Shmuel and Mar Okva. Shmuel was the greater scholar. He was the bigger Talmud Chacham. But Mar Okva had the greater position. He was the Nasi. So from a status position, Mar Okva was greater than Shmuel. But from a learning perspective, Shmuel was greater than Mar Okva. So they had to be delicate about who got the greater honor at different times. So when they were learning Torah, Mar Okva would sit in front of Shmuel as if he was his student, giving Shmuel the greater honor. V'chihavu yatvei bedina, but when they sat in the Beit Din in judgment, hava yativ Shmuel kamed Mar Okva. Then Shmuel would sit in front of Mar Okva, and Mar Okva was the one who got the greater honor. Beruchi dal amos, he would sit 4 amos away from Mar Okva. V'havi chaykile duchto l'Mar Okva betzipta, and they would carve out a place. It's not 100% clear what this means. They would carve out a place for Mar Okva betzipta that they covered with a mat. V'yativ iluya, and he would sit upon it. So that he could hear his words. So that kind of seems to mean that Mar Okva still had some kind of special place above everyone else. He wasn't just one of the other students or whatever, meaning Mar Okva was given the greater kavod. He was had a higher seat, and Shmuel sat in front of him. But at the same time, he had to be able to hear what Shmuel was saying. In any case, sometimes Shmuel was given the greater kavod, and sometimes Mar Okva was given the greater kavod. Kol yoma, every day, have a malave le Mar Okva le Shmuel ad ushbize. Every day, Mar Okva would accompany Shmuel to his lodging place. So this is also a sign of kavod. Mar Okva was showing kavod to Shmuel by escorting him like you would escort a rabbi to his domicile. So he would do this every day. Yom Achad, one day, Itrid Bedine. Mar Okva became preoccupied with the case. If you remember, when they sat in judgment, Mar Okva was given the greater respect. So they were in a situation where they're in the Beit Din, so Mar Okva was the one given more respect, and he was still preoccupied with the case. So as they were walking, Have Azil Shmuel Batre. Instead of escorting Shmuel in a respectful way, he walked ahead and Shmuel walked behind him. And having Shmuel walk behind him is not really respectful, but that's, I guess, the way it was at the Beit Din. In any event, he didn't realize what he was doing. Kimata lebeite, when they got to his house, now it doesn't say whose house it is. I'm curious if he brought Shmuel to his house or if he autopiloted to his own house and didn't really realize that he was so caught up in his own thoughts, he didn't realize that Shmuel was waiting to be escorted to his home as they did every day. Amar le, so Shmuel says to him, Lo negalecha? Is it? Now there's different ways to understand what this means. It could be that the word nega comes from noga, which means clear or shining. So lo negalecha, is it not clear to you what you're doing? Do you not realize what you're doing? Meaning, I'm walking behind you and you're not even paying any attention to me? It's not clear to you? Or it could be that nega is related to the word sage, which is it not sufficient? In which case he's saying to him, it's not bad enough that I've been walking behind you this whole time? There's not enough for you already? Lishrei li, permit me, mar, lishrei li mar, let my esteemed colleague permit me, betigre, from his deliberations or from his argument. So this either means stop treating me terribly, like let me out of the doghouse. Why are you treating me so meanly? Or perhaps it means stop paying attention to the case that's preoccupying you and pay some attention to me. I'm sitting right here. Or, as Rashi says, it means let me go to my own house. I'm walking behind you because every day we walk together. And if you're not gonna escort me to my home, let me go. Tell me, I'm sorry, I'm preoccupied today. Go to your house. In any case, Shmuel was a little exasperated and was letting Mar Okva know that he didn't feel that he was being treated respectfully. Yada, so he realized, the nakat milta padate, that it was in his mind that he was offended. Nahag nizivuta benafshe, so he took upon himself a nizifa, this contrition period, chad yoma, one day. So here we see it's one day. Now what's interesting is he's not the nasi in this case, but he is a big Talmud Chacham. And he's the biggest Talmud Chacham. So it's wondering why it is that for a Nasi, you would keep 30 days, and for such a big Talmud Chacham, you would only keep one day. But that's the story. Here's the second story. Story. Hahu hahi itita. There was a certain woman. Davat yatva b'shvila. She sat down on the side of the road. Havat pashta kara. And she stuck her leg out in the road, or in the pathway. V'kamenifa chushlayin. She was sorting out barley husks. These were she was sorting out the husks from the seeds. V'hava chalif v'azel tzur b'merabanan. A certain Torah scholar went by her. V'lo ichna mikamein. And she didn't make way for him. In other words, her leg was stuck out in the path, and he had to walk by and step over her leg, and she didn't pay any attention to him, and she didn't move her leg, and he had to hop over her. Amar, so he said, Kama chatzifa hahi itta. What a chutzpah this woman is. This woman is such a chutzpanit. Okay, that's all that happened. That's the whole story there. So then she saw that the Torah scholar had gotten upset at her, and I guess she didn't really intend it, but now she wasn't sure what to do. Atai lekami Rav Nachman. So she went to see Rav Nachman and told him the story. Amar la, so he said to her, and he's obviously sympathetic to her. He said, Mi shamat, did you hear, shamta mipume, that he said that you were excommunicated. If you'll remember, we said on our previous recording that a Talmud Chacham, for his own honor, is allowed to put someone into Nidui, and that Nidui counts. Even though it was not a court, it would just have been one person, but if he did it to her, if he said to her, I am shunning you, there would be some effect. So he said, did you hear him actually say that he was putting you under a ban? Amr Leilo, she said no. So he said to her, Amr La, Zili Nehugi Nezivuta Chad Yoma Benafshaich. So he said, go take on yourself Nezifa for one day upon yourself as an act of contrition, and that will be sufficient. So again, here we see that in this case, with a regular person and a regular scholar, that Nezifa of one day counts. Here's the third story. Zutra Bartovia. Have a kapasik sidra coming to Rav Yehuda. Zutra Bar Tovia was learning the sidra. He was learning Torah, the Torah portion of the week, in front of Rav Yehuda. Kimata lahai psuka. They got to a certain pasuk. Now it can't have been the Torah portion of the week because this pasuk is from Tanakh. So I guess they had some kind of Tanakh Yomi kind of project, and they learned a section of Tanakh every day. So they got to this section, which is at the very end of the second book of Shmuel. And it says, Ve'ela divrei David ha'achronim. And these were the last words of David, towards the end of David's life. So Amar Lei, he said to his teacher, Acharonim. It says these are the last words of David. Michlal, from this I can deduce, Dika Rishonim, that there were first words of David. These were the later words, and there were former words. Rishonim Maininu, but which other words were there? Now there is an assumption here. It's not 100% clear what the assumption is. The way Rashi reads it is that here it's clear that David was speaking words of prophecy, because it says Neum David ben Yishai, Neum Hagever Hu Kam Al Mashiach Elokei Yaakov Neum Zmiro Yisrael. That this Neum is clear that these were prophetic words, and David was not usually considered to be a Navi, a prophet. There are no other words that seem to be prophetic words. So what he's really asking is not what other words did David ever say, but where else did David make a prophecy? This is his later prophecy. There must have been a former prophecy. So the teacher, Rav Yehuda, shatik, velo amar lei, velo midi. He was quiet, and he didn't answer him, and he didn't say anything. Now that we're going to see the reason Rav Yehuda didn't say anything is because he got stumped. He didn't know the answer. Or maybe he had once known the answer and he had forgotten it, but he wasn't sure how to answer the question. Hada armale. So then when he didn't answer, Zutra Bartuvia said to him, Hadar, he repeated and said to him, Achronim, if it says Achronim, Michlal Dika Rishonim, Rishonim Mahi, what are the first ones? So he maybe Zutra Bar Tuvia thought that he didn't hear the question or he didn't understand the question, so he repeated the question because he wanted to learn. He wasn't trying to offend him. This is all just a miscommunication. He repeated his question so his teacher would answer. But then his teacher got upset. Rabbi Yehuda got upset. Amarle, ma datach? He goes, what are you doing? What are you thinking? De lo yada perusha the high craw, anyone who doesn't know this interpretation of this verse, lav gavarabuhu, is no great person. In other words, what are you implying? You're harassing me about this, the meaning of this pasuk, because you're saying if I don't know the answer to this, I'm not really a Talmud Chacham. You're humiliating me. Once upon a time I knew it, and now I've lost my mojo. I'm not a great person. So he instead, what he had done was embarrass his teacher by exposing some ignorance, and he took it seriously. Yada, so he realized Danaka Milta Bidate, that the matter was in his mind, that he was upset about it. Nahag Nizivuta Benafshi Chad Yoma, and so he conducted himself with a Nizifa for one day because he had accidentally offended his teacher by implying that he was ignorant of how to interpret the verses, even though he didn't mean it. And this is a sign that, you know, we have to think about what the other person is thinking in general. He was so eager to understand the pasuk that he didn't think about how it might embarrass his teacher if he didn't know the answer. And his teacher was so worried about his own stature and his own learning that he didn't really think about the fact that his student wanted to learn, and that, you know, the miscommunication caused a fashla between them. Okay, so we had three cases where we see that Nizifa is one day long. Before we conclude this section, the Gemara wants to know, how do you answer the question? The question that Rabbi didn't know the answer to. What's the answer? Uda'atan halah, now that we've come to it, mia achronim, what does it mean, achronim, these last words of David? Miklal dika rishonim, it means that there were earlier words, there were first words of David. Rishonim mahi, what are they? So now the Gemara asks the same question as Zutra Bar Tuvia. So the Gemara answers that the earlier words of David were Vayidaber David Lashem et Divrei Hashira Hazot, that David spoke to God the words of this Shira, this poem, Biyom Hitzil Hashem Oto, on the day that Hashem had saved him, Mikaf Kol Oiva, from the hand of all of his enemies, Umikaf Shaul, and from the hand of Shaul. Now, this pasuk is the previous chapter, meaning the chapter that said Divrei David HaAchronim, the last words of David was chapter 23, and this is the beginning of chapter 22 of Shmuel Bet. And it also has the words Divrei. So even though Divrei there we understood as words of prophecy, here they're Divrei Hashira, they're words of poetry. But perhaps the explanation is that it didn't necessarily mean prophecy anyway. Perhaps it just meant that those Dvarim and these Dvarim, and maybe there's a different meaning of the word Dvarim or what we're trying to say. So those were the earlier words. And here's how the Gemara explains it. Amar lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu to David. Hashem said, the Holy One, blessed be He, said to David, David, Shira ata omer al mapalato shel Shaul. You're going to sing a song about the downfall of Shaul. So Hashem is not happy that David was singing a song about how he had escaped from Shaul and Shaul had downfall. Because Shaul was a great man, and then he messed up. Had you been Shaul and he had been David, meaning if things were just a little bit differently than they were, I would have gotten rid of a whole bunch of Davids in front of him. Now it seems that the meaning of this is that David, even though in practice he replaced Shaul and he was also a great man, maybe greater than Shaul, in actuality, Shaul's greatness was more than David. Shaul could have been, coulda, shoulda, woulda, could have been a contender. Shaul was a great man, and Hashem is saying, don't sing about the downfall of this great man, because in fact, he was actually possibly, potentially, greater than you. Hainu dichtiv, this is what's written, Shigayon li David asher shar l'Hashem al divrei kush ben yemini. This is a different citation. So now we've had two citations. One was Divrei David in chapter 23. One was Divrei HaShira HaZot in chapter 22. And this is referring back to Shigayon LeDavid. Shigayon usually means some kind of orchestral arrangement or some kind of a song that Hashem, that David sang to Hashem about the words of Kush Ben Yamini. And we're going to say Kush Ben Yamini is like Shaul, who was Ben Kish Ishimini. In other words, David was singing a song about Shaul, but this particular song says Shigayon. So the way we understand Shigayon is that he's referring to a mistake. What mistake did David made? The mistake David made is that once upon a time he sang a song about the downfall of Shaul, and he's now repudiating that was not the right thing to do, as Hashem rebuked him for it, that he shouldn't have sung a song about the downfall of Shaul because Shaul was really great. So Shigayon here refers to David going away from that idea of singing a song about the downfall of Shaul. Now, the only thing is, I don't know how this explains Divrei David Achronim. It explains what the Divrei David Arishonim are, but it's unclear if the last words of David were also meant to repudiate David's Shira from the previous Perek or not. Was David's last prophecy in chapter 23 coming to say, I don't agree with my words in chapter 22? Or are we just saying that those were the Achronim, which are about one topic, and the Rishonim were about a different topic, and these Rishonim happen to be a story about the downfall of Shaul, which later on, after David was criticized by Hashem for it, he sang one of the Tehillim, Shigayon David, to say that he made a mistake in celebrating the downfall of Shaul. I'm not exactly sure how to interpret it, but that's the best I can do. Finally, the Gemara concludes, V'chi Kush Shemo, but his name wasn't Kush. Bahalo Shaul Shemo, his name was Shaul. So how can you say that Tehillim Zion, which says it's about Kush Ben Yamini, is about Shaul? It's really about Kush. And even if you say it's Kish, that would be David's grandfather. I'm sorry, that would be Shaul's grandfather or father. So the Gemara says, no, it called him Kush not because that's exactly what his name was, but as a descriptor, not as his name. Ella, rather, Makushi, just as a Kushi, which means a Ethiopian or someone from Africa, Mishuna Be'oro, is different in his skin from all other people. In other words, they are very, very black skin, very black skinned. Af Shaul, so to Shaul, Mishuna B'masav, he was different from all other people in his actions. Now, it seems to be, interestingly, that this is Letov. In other words, the way Rashi explains it is Shaul was in his actions was more righteous than everyone. Yes, he made one big mistake and the malchut was taken away from him, but in every other way he was a big tzaddik. He was a very righteous person. So he was mishunav b'masav, that he was more righteous than all other people, just like Ethiopians are blacker than all other people. But the implication here is very interesting, related to questions of racism, seems to be letov. In other words, their blackness is a sign of beauty, just like his righteousness is a sign, just like his actions were a sign of his righteousness. So the Gemara is going to continue this inquiry going forward. Just interesting to point out that the comparison to black skin here is of a positive nature. We'll stop there and continue in our next recording. Have a wonderful day.